Državni ispitni centar.
Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje ispitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleškega jezika. Test je sestavljen iz dveh delov, A in B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nanj nanaša.
Najprej boste nalogo prebrali, nato boste poslušali govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in lahko že med poslušanjem nalogo sproti reševali. Vsako govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat, vmes pa bo premor za reševanje. Začetek in konec besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak.
Odgovore zapisujte razločno v izpitno polo. Uporabljate lahko nalivno pero ali kemični svinčnik. Nečitljive rešitve in nejasni popravki se točkujejo z nič točkami. Želimo vam veliko uspeha.
To so bila splošna navodila. Zdaj boste začeli reševati izpitne naloge. Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You will hear a travel writer talking about his journey in Florida. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column true or false. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through statements 1 to 8.
Florida, land of Mickey Mouse, gullwing thunderbirds, and drive-by shootings. Home of fantasy vacations and gated retirement communities. It is, depending on your age, God's waiting room, or the coolest place to be seen on Earth. Our number one long-haul destination, with nearly 2 million Britons visiting every year. A limp penis dangling off the body of America. And I, an intrepid travel writer who has crossed Eastern Europe in a Trabant and ridden shotgun with a warlord in northern Burma, am going there too. On a whim, on a fly-drive package, to find the soul of the Sunshine State. I know nothing about Florida, and here, at 26,000 feet, over a quivering bowl of key lime slime, I realize that I'm scared. I have no security blanket of research notes to wrap around my anxiety. No string of colorful local contacts, no signed book contract. It's only 24 hours since I decided to come. I try to get a grip, remind myself that I'm driven forward not by theory, but by events, by curiosity, by a desire to understand. I steel myself, decide to rent a car, hit the road, and stop at the first friendly place that takes my fancy. "Say, this is a pretty town," I imagine saying to a local character. "Hands up, lunkhead, and gimme your wallet." In Orlando, at the Alamo car rental counter, Fran hands me the keys to a new, metallic green Chevy Cavalier and asks, "Do y'all know where you're heading?" "No," I admit. "Disney World, Wet n' Wild, Buccaneer Bay?" She wants to direct me to the appropriate airport exit road. "MGM Studios, Marineland." I shake my head. The other passengers have collected their cars and hightailed it out of the airport. Some of them may already be queuing for the Terminator 2 simulator ride. "How about Monkey Jungle?" "Fran," I say, looking at her name badge, "where are the theme parks?" Well, to the south, mostly. Then I'll head north, I say. I look at her Free Alamo map and poke my finger at the central section of the state. I'll go up around here. Fran is in her early 20s, fresh-faced and full-bodied. That is, fat. A victim of snack abuse.
Get ready for unlimited smileage,
billows across her ample chest. On Sundays, she probably bakes Rice Krispie treats and scoffs half of them before they cool. But now she looks at me like a sensible schoolmistress. You know anything about Florida, Rory? Are you familiar with the term rednecks? Yeah, of course. I'd seen the cigarette ads. Up here, she pokes at my random destination. They don't get many visitors. It's a closed society, you understand. Tourists tend to stick to the coasts. Are you telling me, Fran, I ask, that if I drive into a small town, the locals might not be too helpful? Might not be. It ain't for nothing that Florida's got Old Sparky. Old Sparky? The electric chair. Step outside the terminal building. It's hot. Oven hot. I start to sweat. I take off my jacket, jumper, and shirt. I start the Cavalier and turn on the air conditioning. I put up the windows. There's a one-touch button on the dash which locks the car's four doors. All that's missing is a 357 Magnum in the glove box. 20 minutes beyond Sanford, I pass a sign.
Next exit, Casadaga Spiritualist Camp. An historical district since 1992.
Curiosity catches hold of me in a brace of shakes. Kersmack! It's as if I've been thrown a lifeline. It's lucky I don't have an accident. Psychic center of the world, reads the awning on the old Casadaga Hotel. Astral projections and past life regenerations are a specialty. Over 10 million self-proclaimed spiritualists live in the USA, and every resident of Casadaga is a medium. They recall Zen recipes and have intimate chats with angels. Silver baubles trim their balconies. Blue jays and red cockaded woodpeckers fly between the banana trees and pines. Once I started the course, everything developed real fast, explains Mario, a student medium. I was getting messages for people and names of relatives on the other side. Like now, I'm seeing, maybe, your uncle. My uncle? I say, startled, wary. Yeah, your mother's brother.
You will hear the recording again.
Florida, land of Mickey Mouse, gullwing thunderbirds, and drive-by shootings. Home of fantasy vacations and gated retirement communities. It is, depending on your age, God's waiting room, or the coolest place to be seen on Earth. Our number one long-haul destination, with nearly 2 million Britons visiting every year, a limp penis dangling off the body of America, and I, an intrepid travel writer who has crossed Eastern Europe in a Trabant and ridden shotgun with a warlord in northern Burma, am going there too. On a whim, on a fly-drive package, to find the soul of the Sunshine State. I know nothing about Florida, and here, at 26,000 feet, over a quivering bowl of key lime slime, I realize that I'm scared. I have no security blanket of research notes to wrap around my anxiety, no string of colorful local contacts, no signed book contract. It's only 24 hours since I decided to come. I try to get a grip, remind myself that I'm driven forward not by theory, but by events, by curiosity, by a desire to understand. I steel myself. Decide to rent a car, hit the road, and stop at the first friendly place that takes my fancy. "Say, this is a pretty town," I imagine saying to a local character. "Hands up, lunkhead, and gimme your wallet." In Orlando, at the Alamo car rental counter, Fran hands me the keys to a new, metallic green Chevy Cavalier and asks, "Do y'all know where you're heading?" "No," I admit. "Disney World, Wet n' Wild, Buccaneer Bay." She wants to direct me to the appropriate airport exit road. "MGM Studios, Marineland." I shake my head. The other passengers have collected their cars and hightailed it out of the airport. Some of them may already be queuing for the Terminator 2 simulator ride. "How about Monkey Jungle?" "Fran," I say, looking at her name badge, "where are the theme parks?" "Well, to the south, mostly." "Then I'll head north," I say. I look at her free Alamo map and poke my finger at the central section of the state. "I'll go up around here." Fran is in her early 20s, fresh-faced and full-bodied. That is, fat. A victim of snack abuse. "Get ready for unlimited smileage," billows across her ample chest. On Sundays, she probably bakes Rice Krispie treats and scoffs half of them before they cool. But now she looks at me like a sensible schoolmistress. "You know anything about Florida, Rory? Are you familiar with the term rednecks?" "Yeah, of course." I'd seen the cigarette ads. "Up here," she pokes at my random destination, "they don't get many visitors. It's a closed society, you understand. Tourists tend to stick to the coasts." "Are you telling me, Fran," I ask, "that if I drive into a small town, the locals might not be too helpful?" "Might not be. It ain't for nothing that Florida's got Old Sparky." "Old Sparky? The electric chair." Step outside the terminal building. It's hot. Oven hot. I start to sweat. I take off my jacket, jumper, and shirt. I start the Cavalier and turn on the air conditioning. I put up the windows. There's a one-touch button on the dash which locks the car's four doors. All that's missing is a .357 Magnum in the glove box. 20 minutes beyond Sanford, I pass a sign. "Next exit, Casadaga Spiritualist Camp, an historical district since 1992. Curiosity catches hold of me in a brace of shakes. Kersmack! It's as if I've been thrown a lifeline. It's lucky I don't have an accident. "Psychic Center of the World," reads the awning on the old Casadaga Hotel. "Astral projections and past life regenerations are a specialty." Over 10 million self-proclaimed spiritualists live in the USA, and every resident of Casadaga is a medium. They recall Zen recipes and have intimate chats with angels. Silver baubles trim their balconies. Blue jays and red cockaded woodpeckers fly between the banana trees and pines. "Once I started the course, everything developed real fast," explains Mario, a student medium. "I was getting messages for people and names of relatives on the other side. Like now, I'm seeing, maybe, your uncle." "My uncle?" I say, startled, wary. "Yeah, your mother's brother."
This is the end of Section A. Section B. In the following program, you will hear about a fire brigade established in Girton, the first college for women. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in the spaces provided for you. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through questions 1 to 8.
1873, Girton, the first university college for women in Britain, opened its doors to a handful of young students. The college was situated 2 miles out of Cambridge with the intention of protecting the young ladies from the attentions of their fellow undergraduates. So with time on their hands, they had an idea for an unusual enterprise. They formed the first and only all-female fire brigade in the country. Libby Spurrier went to the Fire Service College to meet the honorary archivist Michael Kiernan. She also went to Girton College, where she spoke to their archivist, Kate Perry.
It was formed in 1879 because two students, Sarah Marks and Gertrude Jackson, were out walking in the neighbourhood and they saw a nearby farmer's haystack on fire. And it came to them that the college was very ill provided in terms of fire rescue.
Fire cover and fire defence was totally up to the local community. And some communities, London, Edinburgh, Exeter, were very, very well organised. Some communities were absolutely non-existent in their fire cover.
Girton was very much a village outside Cambridge. In 1879, we were lit entirely by oil lamps and candles. So we were very vulnerable from the point of view of fire. And Girtonians actually were known by the candle grease down their dresses from walking along our long corridors with a guttering candle.
It would have taken time to get the message into Cambridge that there was a fire, and then you'd had to have assembled the horses, you've had to have assembled the crew, you would have had to have assembled enough volunteers for the bucket chain. And then, once you've got all of that lot, you then start the 3 or 4 mile journey out to Gorton. And by the time you get out there, your small fire is a fairly big one.
Sarah Marks and Gertrude Jackson proposed an incredibly elaborate scheme of 3 fire corps, one for each corridor, headed by a captain with a sub-captain. And overall, there'd be a head captain. And there would be drills. But of course, they didn't know the procedures. This is the very first photograph that we have here in 1880. It's very, very faded, a very faded sepia photograph. And it shows 7 people, one on a ladder propped against the wall, and one with her hands on the fire engine here.
Which just looks like a wheelbarrow.
Yes.
With a sort of dustbin.
A dustbin. They are not, by any means, fragile. Women, they look very, very capable. But if you look at their dress, they're in long, full skirts, and many of them quite tight bodices with little buttons all the way up.
I'm Charlotte Rouchet, and my grandmother, Georgina Buckler, in 1888, she went up on a scholarship to Girton College. On her 21st birthday, in November 1889, she decided to start her diaries again. The diary starts in the November of her second year, so she's an established person, and fire brigade practice just crops up. Suddenly we're having tea and we're having our friend to stay, and then just before 7:30 we had an alarm which went very badly. Buckets short, marching shocking.
There's a rather charming piece in this volume one of the Girton College Fire Brigade.
Is it a little exercise book?
Yes, it's a little exercise book, and in fact it contains instructions to be passed on, the duties of the head captain, duties of a captain, the annual examination, and the various drills, hosing, corpsing, insensible drill. This is the treatment for burns. Number one, cut off clothing, never drag it off if necessary. Immediately cover up the burn from the air. Apply any kind of sweet or solid oil.
You will hear the recording again.
Now, in 1873, Girton, the first university college for women in Britain, opened its doors to a handful of young students. The college was situated 2 miles out of Cambridge with the intention of protecting the young ladies from the attentions of their fellow undergraduates. So with time on their hands, they had an idea for an unusual enterprise. They formed the first and only all-female fire brigade in the country. Libby Spurrier went to the Fire Service College to meet the honorary archivist Michael Kiernan. She also went to Girton College, where she spoke to their archivist, Kate Perry.
It was formed in 1879 because two students, Sarah Marks and Gertrude Jackson, were out walking in the neighbourhood and they saw a nearby farmer's haystack on fire. And it came to them that the college was very ill provided in terms of fire rescue.
Fire cover and fire defence was totally up to the local community. And some communities, London, Edinburgh, Exeter, were very, very well organised. Some communities were absolutely non-existent in their fire cover.
Girton was very much a village outside Cambridge. In 1879, we were lit entirely by oil lamps and candles. So we were very vulnerable from the point of view of fire. And Girtonians actually were known by the candle grease down their dresses from walking along our long corridors with a guttering candle.
It would have taken time to get the message into Cambridge that there was a fire, and then you'd had to have assembled the horses, you'd had to have assembled the crew, you would have had to have assembled enough volunteers for the bucket chain. And then, once you've got all of that lot, you then start the 3 or 4 mile journey out to Gorton. And by the time you get out there, your small fire is a fairly big one.
Sarah Marks and Gertrude Jackson proposed an incredibly elaborate scheme of 3 fire corps, one for each corridor, headed by a captain with a sub-captain. And overall, there'd be a head captain. And there would be drills. But, of course, they didn't know the procedures. This is the very first photograph that we have here in 1880. It's very, very faded, a very faded sepia photograph. And it shows 7 people, one on a ladder propped against the wall, and one with her hands on the fire engine here.
Which just looks like a wheelbarrow.
Yes.
With a sort of dustbin.
A dustbin. They are not, by any means, fragile women. They look very, very capable. But if you look at their dress, they're in long, full skirts, and many of them quite tight bodices with little buttons all the way up.
I'm Charlotte Ruchet, and my grandmother, Georgina Buckler, in 1888, she went up on a scholarship to Girton College. On her 21st birthday, in November 1889, she decided to start her diaries again. The diary starts in the November of her second year, so she's an established person, and fire brigade practice just crops up. Suddenly, we're having tea, and we're having our friend to stay, and then, just before 7:30, we had an alarm, which went very badly. Buckets short, marching shocking.
There's a rather charming piece in this volume one of the Girton College Fire Brigade.
Is it a little exercise book?
Yes, it's a little exercise book. And in fact, it contains instructions to be passed on, the duties of the head captain, duties of a captain, the annual examination, and the various drills, hosing, corpsing, insensible drill. This is the treatment for burns. Number one, cut off clothing, never drag it off if necessary. Immediately cover up the burn from the air. Apply any kind of sweet or salad oil.
This is the end of section B.
Končuje se preverjanje slušnega razumevanja angleškega jezika.
Prosimo, nehajte pisati, zaprite izpitno polo in jo skupaj z ocenjevalnim obrazcem položite ob rob mize.